winemaker from Lodi in California's Central Valley agricultural heartland, who's already served over 14 years of a 24-year sentence for providing material support to terrorists and for lying to FBI agents. A judge has now ruled that the now 36-year-old Hyatt was ineffectively represented by an inexperienced defense attorney the first time around. In Jamestown, Virginia, yesterday, they commemorated the 400th anniversary of the oldest known representative body in what was then not the United States, but simply called the New World. And on hand and making remarks was President Trump.
It's a true privilege to be back in the great Commonwealth of Virginia. And it's a tremendous honor to stand on these historic grounds as the first president to address a joint session of the oldest lawmaking body in all of the Western Hemisphere, the Virginia General Assembly.
And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunter and Chamber Radio. The weather today is high of 87, low of 66. Thursday, high of 87. Thursday night, low of 65. Friday, high of 85. Slight chance of thunderstorms. Saturday, chance of thunderstorms, high of 86. And mostly sunny on Sunday, high of 88.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunter and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunter and Chamber Radio. And we are not on Facebook Live today, but I'm talking to my good friend, Dr. Paul Keel, and he's been on before. He was one of my very first guests when I was starting out because I knew I'm so comfortable talking to him, and he has so many great stories and so much rich history. And we met via Toastmasters, but Dr. Paul Keel is he is the epitome of health, wellness, and wealth because he is an avid exerciser and swimmer and runner, and you've got so many great stories to tell. So welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
Get closer to the mic. There you go. There you go. Great. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, can you start telling us about you wrote a book called The Exercise and the Mind, and can you tell for our readers, our listeners, how important it is and how beneficial it is to have some kind of exercise in your life?
Well, as you know, I'm a psychiatrist, and I start the book telling about a hospital in the early 1900s in the North Carolina, a psychiatric hospital, which emphasized as treatment exercise. They had people take a 5-mile walk every day and sensible eating. This hospital was taken over in the late 40s by Duke University. It's the hospital where Zelda Fitzgerald, Scott Fitzgerald's wife, died in a fire. This was around the time that Duke took over. And Duke has done some wonderful studies on exercise and depression. And many exercises, many studies have duplicated this. That is, do a certain amount of exercise, it modulates your depressive trends. And they show people X number of weeks of exercise versus those who didn't exercise versus those who also took medication. And the best results were those who just plain exercised, and their relief lasted longer. And if they made exercise a part of their life, they did much better. And that was a forerunner of many studies on exercise, be it swimming, jogging, walking, running, biking, which does wonders to one's neurohormones. It's not the whole story. Still, the tendency to be depressed in some people, they don't have the answer in the medication, neither in the medication or anything else. But they're on their way to finding solutions. One of them is exercise. I think we were meant to exercise.
I agree. And also, you're a very philanthropic guy, and I always say that we're meant to exercise, but we're also, it's in our DNA, and we're meant to help one another. Will you agree with that?
Well, let me tell you, do I agree with that? I sure do. Let me tell you about this study that attracted my attention. Well, it was an op-ed piece by Nicholas Kristof, and I like to read his stuff, but he begins with, people accuse me of being addicted to running. He said, maybe I am. And then somehow he segued to a study that was done where women were given sums of money. And that was like, for some people, eating the right food, drugs. What they found is, through brain studies, the PET scan, they were able to see that the pleasure, the reward area in the brain lit up in these women, given the monies. Give them sums of money. I mean, anybody would be happy getting money. Then they found that these pleasure areas, now, what are this is an area of the brain where some people need drugs to light it up, to feel rewarded, or certain foods, or other addictions. But here's a way exercise will do the same thing. Well, anyway, they found that the same women given money, donating that money to charity, the reward area in the brain lit up. So his conclusion was, he asked the question, can altruism be addicting? And he said, truly, it can be. What appealed to me also, it was the whole idea of doing a good deed for its own sake, and the work of Maimonides, the rabbi, scholar, teacher, of the around 1100, and he was a physician, and his famous, well-known piece of writing had to do with the performance of a mitzvah, God's commandment to do charity and do good deeds. And the reward for a mitzvah is another mitzvah. Therefore, the conclusion that altruism, doing something good, can be addicting, doing it for its own sake, and doing it anonymously. He had a hierarchy of values. Do something good. And I think I spoke about this last time, it always reminded me of the Lone Ranger who would do a heroic deed, but he was masked, so you didn't even know who he was. And he left town without people knowing, without a reward, on his way to some other trouble area where he would clean up get the villains out.
Yeah, and I think that the modern version of that is there's been focus on happiness and doing good deeds and the pay it forward kind of thing. So pay it forward. So do a good deed And then if someone, or if they happen to know who it was or who did it, you just say, well, no, don't do anything for me. Pay it forward. Do something else, something good for her.
Do it for somebody.
Right, like the classic is paying for the person behind you, paying for their coffee in the drive-thru or their meal and things like that. So it's definitely, you know, even though it's got ancient roots and it's, like I said, it's built into our DNA, we've got modern twists on it that are equally as good and easy to do today. You don't have to be the Lone Ranger and gallop off. You can just, you know, just do a simple good deed and then it's addictive. Right?
That's the point. It's addictive. It's scientifically proven.
Yeah, and I think I think so. Exercise is a great thing, and helping others is a great thing. And can you talk about? We talked about the mitzvah, which is you said that you do a good deed. And the other thing that we talked about briefly was the shidduch, which is connecting. So what I talk about on the show is that maybe you don't know where to begin. You want to help others. You want to volunteer. You want to get involved, but you don't know where to begin. And I always tell people either talk to your neighbors, talk to the people at your place of worship, talk to the people you work with, or just a friend. And you have to start. I was telling somebody this yesterday. It's like you have to start. Unless you start, you're not going to get anywhere. So you just start, but you can have these conversations. And through these connections, you'll find out what people are doing to fulfill themselves. And maybe something will spark something in you. So you have to make a connection. So tell us about shidduch and what that means.
Well, you remind me of my meeting and my friendship with Joseph Frelinghuysen. Let's go back to 1971. I had started jogging, and my goal was to run in the marathon. I thought it was just the Boston Marathon. But I found out they were having marathons in Central Park. So I entered the 1971 New York City Marathon. Nothing was required. They said it was flat. It was it was a short 2-mile loop and then four times around Central Park. I have a picture of the start, and I could see myself in the back. I know it's me because I wore a handkerchief around my head. And there's a man to my left. Well, that man and I ran together. I didn't see his face. I just saw his feet. And he had a very broad-based gait. He almost wobbled down. And he was instructing me. He had run marathons before, and he was giving me advice. And I thought, that's nice. I'll help this old guy out. At the end, he'll probably be collapsing, and I'll help him. And he was giving me advice with my first marathon. Well, before I knew it, he's a few steps ahead of me, a few more steps ahead of me. Up ahead, there's a hill. I see him go over the hill, and it's the last I saw him. And I later learned that he finished about an hour ahead of me, and I was the last finisher. A month later, I saw a name of another doctor. I called him, who had been in the marathon. I called him. He lived in Princeton. He invited me to come to his house to run, and I thought that'd be terrific. I'd run in the woods around Princeton. I got there, and he said, we're waiting for this old guy, Joe Frelinghuysen. He's coming. He came on time, 10 o'clock. Say it was 10 in the morning. We shook hands. We're running on the road, and then I see the way he's running, the gait, his feet, the wide gait. He reminded the Jolly Green Giant. And I said, were you in the New York City Marathon? He said, yeah. And he was the guy talking to me. I never saw his face. I just saw his gait in that race. Well, anyhow, that began a friendship. He invited me over to his house in Far Hills. And I learned that area, which little did I know that 15 years later, 20 years later, I would move to that area. He was in the process of writing a book about running or exercise and nutrition, and also a book about his World War II experience. He had been captured in North Africa, sent to an Italian prison camp, made two attempts to escape. On the third attempt, he was successful, was running through the Apennine Mountains on the run from the Germans. A peasant family found him, helped him, and finally he made his way to the Allied lines. Years later, Joe came back to Italy, found this family, and brought them over to the United States. The man was a cheesemaker. And he settled them, and they, large family. And I met this man at Joe's, what was it, his 80th birthday party. That was 1992. And somebody, I was with Joe's son-in-law, and we asked him this question: why did you help, at the risk of your life, these people? And he said, because I am an Italian. He said, we are a loving and generous people. And luckily I had my tape recorder, and I recorded it. And he said, look, if I've got a piece of fruit and you don't have anything, you take half and I take half. If I'm caught, if I got to die, if you got to die, I got to die with you. Words like that, it was just beautiful. And it was a whole metamorphosis for Joe. He, on the book he was writing, I said to him one day, I said, I read somewhere, we were on the run, I said, I read somewhere doctor books are getting popular, so use my name, Paul J. Keel, M.D. Pay me a dollar for the whole thing. So I added a little bit to that book, and we did get a publisher. And it was called Keep Your Heart Running. And he insisted we got royalties, nothing much, but he insisted I share in it. And it's a little late, but I want people to know that this was his writing. I did a little bit. But I learned a lot about it through him. Here he was teaching me. And he was going through a metamorphosis of sorts where his business went bankrupt. Raritan Valley Farms, he had a dairy business, and somebody was in charge was doing something bad. And he was in bankruptcy for many years, and his whole goal was to get his debts paid so that he can pay all his lenders in the bank. And he made good on his bankruptcy. Quote from Dante Alighieri: midway through the passage of life, I came across a forest dark, for the straightforward past had been lost. And what he found gratifying was teaching kids in Sunday school and teaching them about his war experiences. And what had happened, well, let me tell you about this marathon we ran. It was 1973. I can give the exact date because it was the Saturday Night Massacre. I think it was the end of October. And we were there for that Saturday night where Nixon fired the independent counselor, fired the Elliot Richardson, because he wanted Richardson to fire Cox. He wouldn't do it. Richardson resigned. His assistant resigned, and somebody else took over, and Cox was fired. But that was momentous. The next day, we ran the marathon. I finished with a bunch of others. And by then I improved on my marathon running. But where was Joe when I was worried? And there was rumored he dropped out. He got injured badly and an ambulance took him away. He fainted, this and that, and I got worried. And about an hour after I ran, I finished. And most of it, with a whole bunch at the same time. I walked up a little hill from where we were all gathered, and there was the American flag, and there was the finish line. And in about 4 hours and 30 minutes, there he finished. And I was under the flag applauding for him. And that was such a momentous moment in his life. All I knew was I was happy he was safe. And he was talking to me, what if my family hadn't come over from Holland in the 1600s? And what if your grandparents hadn't come to the United States in the 1890s? And what he was reliving was his war experience, where the night before, at a certain point, due to faulty intelligence, his commander was captured and later killed. And in an attempt to rescue him, he didn't know he was killed, and with the same faulty intelligence, he was captured and sent to the Italian prison camp. And was he reliving, when we would take our runs in far hills and along the mountains, his odyssey of many years before? But this time it ends, it has a happy ending. We come to his house and he makes the lunch. And that bonded us like nothing else. And I think it was soon after that that we got a publisher. And then some years later, he got a publisher for his book about his odyssey, which was a big hit locally. And over the next few years, now I'm talking about 1975, 76, 77, he was arthritis and everything got him down. He didn't run much, but he was doing his Sunday school teaching, and that was where he told his stories, and that's where he really found gratification in his Sunday school class.
That's incredible. I mean, an incredible story. We're going to have to take a quick break, but we'll be back with plenty more stories about the runner's high, the helper's high, and the various books.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. You're listening to Hunterdon Chamber Radio. This is Happy to Help. And today my guest is Dr. Paul Keel. He is a retired psychiatrist, an author, a marathoner, has run over 50 marathons, an avid swimmer. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, he is the epitome of health, wealth, and wellness, and is very giving and caring, and I'm just so happy to have him on here to talk about. He's got a rich history of all these incredible stories. And in the last segment, he was talking a little bit about the Saturday Night Massacre, where Nixon fired a bunch of people. And we've definitely heard that in the news somewhere lately. I wonder where. So, but anyway, also, and he ran a marathon the next day. And the other person he was talking about that he wrote a book with is Frelinghuysen, and you may be familiar with that name. That's another political name. We've got the Frelinghuysen Arboretum in Morristown, right? And so why don't you tell us about the Frelinghuysens and their involvement in politics and history in New Jersey?
Well, his father was U.S. Senator during the Harding period. And a little bit of history that people don't know. World War One ends, the armistice, November 1918. United States does not sign on to it. The Knox-Porter resolution, a couple years later, where we do not join the League of Nations, and there's other concessions, and we finally, July 2nd, sign on to the armistice of 1918. And the armistice was signed July 2nd at the home of Senator Frelinghuysen, where now there is a P.C. Richards. There are pictures of the families, the whole family, Joe, who was then, how old would he be? 1920, he would be 9 years old. His sisters, Senator Frelinghuysen, who then went across the street and played golf at the country club, which is still there, and there's a plaque there. But that was the ending of for the United States, the armistice. We signed on to the armistice in 1911. Hardly anybody knew about it because that same night, or the night before, Jack Dempsey fought George Carpentier in Jersey City. And that was the big headlines. So he was really part of history and of a very conservative political bent, which changed, which Joe came away from quite a bit after his World War II experience. Which changed him in a lot of ways. But Joe was one of the people I met who I think my life was changed quite a bit by knowing him. The person that really that I met after Joe, Dr. Ernst Jokel, which I could write a book about him, and he had written many books. Born 1907, Germany. In 1928, he was a physician by then, head of the sports medicine department at the University of Breslau Medical School. And he was part of the 1928 German Olympic team. A few years later, he lost his job. He was a Jew. And his wife-to-be was part of the German women's gymnastic team. And there's a wonderful picture of them running on the beach, the women, which became the inspiration for the Chariots of Fire picture and book. By 1934, his wife to be was also in trouble with the authorities. She was anti-Hitler, would not give the Nazi salute. So in 1934, they fled to South Africa. The only two places historically in 1934 that were taking refugees was Australia and South Africa. There he met Jan Christian Smuts, who wrote a famous treatise on holism, which became the basis of holistic medicine years later. Smuts was a botanist, a lawyer, a statesman, one of the founders of the League of Nations, one of the founders of the United Nations, who was Prime Minister of South Africa, and he was a great exerciser too. By the late 50s, he was gone, and the Afrikaners and the others took over. And Jokel, who had been his associate, also left the area and fled to Canada. And I got to know Dr. Ernst Jokel the mid-1980s. And I'll never forget, we were talking about sports medicine, the whole history of it, and he had this thick accent. He says, and the whole field of sports medicine, he says, "Poor, it is the people." And it was the people that he had met. And one that he became associated with was Dr. Adolf Abrahams, brother of Harold Abrahams, who was featured in the movie and the book Chariots of Fire. And they became associates. And Abrahams was considered the father of sports medicine in Europe, and Jokel, this father of sports medicine in America. He came here, well, maybe first to Canada and then here, and he was at the University of Louisville, University of Kentucky at Louisville. Was it Louisville, or what's the difference? Not Louisville, Lexington.
Okay.
I'll tell you a funny story. I was visiting him once, and over a weekend, because we were going to go with some friends further south for a marathon, for the Smoky Mountain Marathon. And he was showing me around town, and he takes me to this bookstore and sits me down. He says, "You must look at the books." And he left. And I think he wanted to see what book I would read. So I picked out a book on baseball. And I was reading about the Black Sox scandal. And it was something I wondered about. Suddenly, he's behind me. He looks at the book I'm reading. He says, "Paul, a man with your background and education, you're reading a baseball book." He says, "Ah, come, let's go." We left. And we came to his house. The next morning, my friends came to pick me up to go to the Smoky Mountain Marathon, which was in where was it? South Carolina, I think. And anyhow, but he had to show my friend and me his books. And he's got a library, and he's got all these treasured books. My friend looked to take a book out. He said, "Don't touch." It was funny. There was his pride and joy, that library and the books he had.
Well, they're not going to do any good sitting on the shelf, right? You got to read the books.
Well,
you can't just there
read them. But Couldn't touch him.
Oh, that's funny. Well, no, the thing I love about you, Paul, is that you're a man of many passions. So, you know, you're passionate about exercise and giving back and baseball. And I think that just keeps you young and vibrant and healthy is by following your passions, right? And I love all the stories that you have and that you tell. And the other thing that I find fascinating is that you've shared some great stories about your running and being at the second New York City Marathon, and then you were there when there were five women. That tell us about how the New York City Marathon wouldn't allow women and how it happened when the first women were there.
What it was the AAU said, okay, you can run in the marathon, but you have to go 10 minutes early. Well, the picture is they shot off the gun for the women to run, and the women are sit down, and the men sat down. And it was one of the great moments in sports history where we were on strike with the women.
And there were just five, right? Just five women? Five women?
Five or six women, and they had placards. One of them was Nina Kusick, who earlier in April was among five or six women allowed to run in the Boston Marathon. Now, six or seven of them were allowed to run. The AAU allowed it, but they had to go ahead of time. But they wouldn't go. 10 minutes later, gun goes off again, and went and ran, and somebody was singing Sidewalks of New York, Boys and Girls Together, and we were all laughing. I didn't realize what a momentous event that was, but my picture is there standing behind them, and I know it's me because I know I was there, and there's a headband, and everybody's laughing and as if we were pulling this great spoof. But some of it was anticlimax. Some of the women there dropped out. I ran about 20 miles and then another 2 miles, and I was running in it so that I would get a qualifying time for Boston, and it was obvious that the way I felt, I wasn't going to do it in 3.5 hours. So I dropped out. One of the women in it was an 18-year-old who had just started college. I knew her, and I was in touch with her years later. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the great moments, and we didn't realize that at the time.
Yeah, I think it's just incredible. And then I think just last year, the woman that registered anonymously in the Boston Marathon and got almost shoved out and kicked out, right? Didn't she just run it 50 years later or something like that, right?
That was 1967. That was Catherine, the K, Schweitzer. And she had applied at that. It was known to be an all-men's event. So she signs in as K. Schweitzer. And there's a famous picture of her being. Well, what happened is that one of the directors, Jock Semple, who was another character, spoke with a very thick Scotch accent. He was a good guy, but he was rigid, and he tried to throw her off the course, but. Or wanted to rip off her number. Next to Kathy Schweitzer was her boyfriend, who she later married, big guy, and he pushes him, so you see him flying, and she continued and ran. She was in that, yes, in that New York City Marathon. She was also allowed to run in the 72 Marathon earlier, April of 72, and this was October 1st of 72. Okay. And I think she dropped out too. But in 73, they made a big ceremony. She's reunited with Jock Semple. they're hugging. Yeah. And by then, by 73, well, 72 was, I ran in it, I think there were 1,000 runners. In 73, maybe there were 5,000 runners, and maybe 1,000 were women. But nowadays, if there are 50,000 runners in a marathon, half of them are 25,000 are women.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, I have this friend of mine that I worked with when I was just out of college, and she married a physician, an obstetrician, and they have 6 children, and she's run, I think, 150 marathons. So she's run, and she just turned 50, so happy birthday, Michelle. But she, if you want to read about it, it's a very great book. It's called If You Give a Mom a Marathon. And she's run a marathon twice in every state. She's run one on every continent, and she's done Ironmans and crazy. So, but she definitely caught the running bug, and it's been fun for her. But can you, what you said, you ran cross country, and then you got into marathons. So, what about running and swimming and exercising? Like, what made you catch the bug and the runner's high and kept you going?
Well, But the runner's high is almost a misnomer. But I think when you finish a marathon, you feel so good that the darn thing is over and you're happy. And there's a whole cocktail of neurohormones that come out. One exciting, one calming you down. What happened? We moved to Mountainside. There was a reservation across the street, and I used to take the dogs walking. I read an article in 1968, Sunday New York Times, jogging is an in-sport. And it mentioned all the people that took up jogging, some famous names. And I heard there were masters age group running. And I had run my last semester in high school. I ran cross-country. And I always felt that I did not reach my potential as a runner. So that started me training really hard after I read that article. And I wanted to run a marathon, and I wanted to run some mile runs. And that got me going. I would run. I joined the YMCA Plainfield, where I had my office at the time, and there was a track, and then some of us would run outside, and one thing leads to another. You meet this one and that one, and there's camaraderie, and it built on itself.
Yeah, you just follow your passion, and then you find people that share that, and then pretty soon you got a community, right? And runners are, a little bit wacko, I think, with doing the marathons.
There's a certain craziness.
Exactly, right? Monopod.
It's a very healthy craziness, but I can remember I was in a 50-mile run with my friend.
That's two marathons.
it was near the end, and we were laughing. How are we going to do this? We never ran more than maybe 30 miles in a practice run. How are we going to do it? And there was a way of doing it, which worked. There was another run, 1976 Boston Marathon. You can look it up. The temperature was 100 degrees. It was a freak. And I remember 100 degrees, it really was 100 degrees at the start. And I remember the morning before, I was laughing. How can we possibly do it? And partially how we did it was that the marathon was such a big thing in Boston. You run along the roads, there are people with hoses on both sides of the road. And I probably ran more than 26 miles that day, because you'd run to the right and there's somebody with a hose, and you'd veer to the left and somebody with a hose. And you met people along the way that you knew, spectators would cheer you on. And then I met a guy who I'd run with, and we kind of got together, and he was adding a rhythm. But anyway, it was teamwork just to finish. And also, when you, by the time you got closer to Boston, it got cooler, closer to the bay. And we did it. And there was a crazy, it wouldn't occur to me not to do it, even though I knew it was 100 degrees. And a bunch of us were all crazy.
Crazy, yep, crazy in really great shape. But no, I think you said it's a combination of physical endurance and mental perseverance, right? Yep. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
The traffic is stuck.
Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on 100 in Chamber Radio. And today we're talking with my friend, Dr. Paul Keel, who is the author of Exercise in the Mind and also helped co-author other books. And he is a dynamo at 89 years old. He is thriving. He is the epitome of exercise, health, wealth, and wellness. And so I asked him to share some of his secrets or just his philosophies towards living a long and happy and healthy life. And you've been married how many years now?
63 years.
63. Wow. So yeah.
Five kids.
I know. I got five kids. You got five kids. I know, but I'm not going to make it to 63 years in marriage. But hopefully, I'll make it to 89 in life. So and beyond. So tell us a little bit about your philosophy for how you maintain your health and wealth and wellness.
I think the running boom and the swimming boom began in a time of turmoil, the Vietnam War, and people looking for a certain amount of certainty. In other words, I jogged a mile today. I did it in X number of minutes. We were looking for that. Plus, I was in a tough profession, psychiatry. You want to be a doctor, and you think of curing people and doing this and that, and it's harder. The gratification is not always there. I think that led me into it, and it was natural for me, because I think anybody who wants to exercise, you're not going to stick with it if the goal is do X number of push-ups a day, lift this number of weights, which I couldn't do. But I enjoyed walking through the woods, and I'd been a runner a little bit before. I didn't go to swimming because in my own career, I swam every semester in high school and every semester in college. And in college, every year I got worse. And I was so happy when it was over. There was, I only thought of swimming in terms of competition. But anyway, I could enter running with the idea of reaching my, quote, potential. And I started with that. I had to stop running because I have some quirk in my metabolism where there's a tendency to form clots, and I formed clots in the large vessels of my large veins of my left lower extremity. So it became time to say goodbye to it. And so I started swimming again, which was easy to get back to. And it was a good challenge because swimming technique had changed so much. And even now, I have to find a new challenge in swimming because I'm getting slower, and I don't want anybody to know how slow I've got.
But you swim almost every day, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a wonderful article Sunday, The Swimmer's Guide to Happiness, Sunday New York Times, by a psychiatrist. And I even wrote to him because the goal now is to perfect your technique to find the beauty in the sport. But so for anybody, find something you like, and the easiest way is walking.
Yeah.
And walking in a nice area.
And walking without your headphones, right? Without your headphones, just with nature, right?
With
silence.
Or, with or without.
Okay.
I tried headphones and it didn't. With nice scenery. So get up earlier in the morning, take a walk. Or if you like swimming, then the Y opens at 5 in the morning.
Well, I mean, and I get that, but I get the best sleep early in the morning, so I need my sleep. But I find twilight, you know, kind of like 6 o'clock. I mean, in the winter, not obviously, but, you know, it's cooler in the evening and the sunset, and that's my zen time for walking or being outside. So you got to pick what works for you, right?
Find something that you enjoy doing. But I started with the Canadian Mounties exercise book, and I did it for a while, but then your leg hurts, so you're not going to do it for a few days, then you don't get back to it, or you do push-ups, and then you hurt your arm, and you quit. And
yeah, well, injury might set you back, but you can't let that stop you, so you got to persevere.
Well, running, you're always running between injuries.
Right.
And everybody feared the day that you couldn't run. And I got to that day where I had to give it up, but luckily I had swimming to fall back to.
Yeah, and that served you well, right? Yeah, it's the water's soothing, and there's so many ways you can exercise in the water. If you're not swimming, you can do water aerobics, you can float, you can, you know, even just floating on your back.
And you do it with a lot of people, this camaraderie.
That's community, right? That's the thing, find your tribe. You thrive when you find your tribe, and whether that's volunteering, whether that's exercising, whether that's giving back, working, serving, doing something, reading, right, or writing.
Yeah.
So I will publish some of the. You always have great pictures of history, and I will on Facebook. I'll write the names of the books that we talked about here today, and post some of the amazing pictures that you have. So, any final words of advice to our listeners out there?
Well, I think as far as exercise, it's just finding balance is the word, balance in your life, and doing what you can do, and not overdoing it, but it's a balance. And I think the easiest way is walking at a time when you can do it. And as far as nutrition and exercise, it's a matter of cutting out some of the junk, and of course cutting out smoking,
vaping,
and try to emphasize fresh fruit and vegetables, and you could have a steak, and you could now and then, once a week, twice a week, cut down on some of the junky desserts and avoid the fad diets. They're terrible. Just forget them.
Right, and I always tell people we live in the Garden State, so we're lucky. We have nature's bounty right outside our door with the farmers markets and everything. So take advantage of that, especially now with peaches, green beans, all kinds of good stuff. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Democratic candidates divided about health care and how to fix it. That was evident in the Democratic presidential debate last night, as 10 Dems, including progressives Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, were warned by their more moderate colleagues that voters don't want sweeping, possibly undeliverable promises. At the suggestion that such things from Democrats could hand President Trump re-election, Bernie Sanders told the crowd in Detroit,
"The reason we are going to defeat Trump and beat him badly is that he is a fraud and a phony, and we're going to expose him for what he is."
10 more Democrats, including former VP and frontrunner Joe Biden, will be on that stage in Detroit tonight. The ADP private payroll report out today says the private sector added 156,000 jobs last month, beating expectations of about 148,000. And this is USA Radio News.
Do you wish you could get better sleep and maybe lose a few pounds? Maybe more than a few pounds? Well, there's this product called Calitrin that helps with both sleep and weight loss. Just listen to what people are saying about it.
"I've been taking Calitrin for right about 3 months, and I've lost 24 pounds and 19 overall inches. But my sleep has improved, I have so much more energy, and I have the desire to succeed more than ever. Anyone who needs weight loss, more energy, and better sleep, this product really does deliver."
"I'm Roger. Over the 3 months that I took the product, my sleeping habits are increasingly much better. I got a better night's sleep, and I just can't say enough about the product and how it makes you feel. Also, additionally lost a little bit of weight on the program as well."
"Hi, this is Erickson. I take Calitrin for weight loss, and I've lost about 20 pounds, and I feel great."
Calitrin is scientifically proven to help with sleep and weight loss safely and effectively. Check it out at toploss.com. That's toploss.com.
Two TSA agents suspended from their jobs at Miami International Airport. That after a noose was found in a non-public area of the facility, TSA union representative Linda Jones.
"This workforce is very diverse, so I felt like that person must have some kind of psychological issues."
Jones was speaking to NBC News. The noose with two toy gorillas hanging from it was reportedly found to be hanging in the baggage screening area and was immediately reported to management and taken down, as an investigation has been launched. And those two agents, believed to have been responsible, have been placed on administrative leave. Convicted sex offender billionaire Jeffrey Epstein is scheduled to be in a New York City courtroom today, facing new charges of sex trafficking girls as young as 14. His appearance coming just about a week after he was found with neck injuries in his cell and was placed on suicide watch. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
In Gilroy, California, police are still investigating the deadly mass shooting at a food festival on Sunday afternoon that left three people dead and injured over a dozen. The police chief in Gilroy says they no longer believe the suspect was working with a second person, although he adds,
"I don't think I can say that with absolute certainty at this point because we're still following up leads."
The suspect, a 19-year-old, was killed by police just about a minute after the shooting began. We may be starting to say goodbye to those mini shampoo bottles. Holiday Inn is now getting rid of them, saying it wants to help save the environment. All mini toiletries are now going to be replaced with bulk-size supplies by 2021 by Holiday Inn. It affects about 843,000 hotel rooms in more than 5,600 hotels around the world. The chief executive of the parent company says it was the next logical step after they announced a plastic straw ban last year. And home prices may be slowing, but it's certainly a seller's market in Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Tampa. Those three cities saw the highest annual gains in May, from 5% to nearly 7%. It's the first month that all the data's in for. Out of 20 cities in the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index, seven others are seeing spikes, including L.A., San Diego, and Washington, D.C. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.